fact, some sort of vermin which invaded food sources. There was a theory among the crew that they were things to do with religion, offerings to food gods, perhaps. She put it carefully on one side of her desk. In the right light, she thought, it looked a bit like the gunnery officer. Then she opened the little cage beside the bowl and let her birds out. There had been things very like alligators among the Scree-wee's distant ancestors, and some habits had been handed down. The captain opened her mouth fully, which made her lower and upper jaws move apart in a way that would make a human's eyes water. The birds hopped in and began to clean her teeth. One of them found a small piece of plastic ray gun. The watching ship was moving, still keeping at a great distance, travelling around the fleet in a wide circle. It had watched one more attacker come in. Johnny had got rid of this one with a missile and some shots, although a flashing red light on the panel was suggesting that something, somewhere, wasn't working anymore. Probably those secondary pumps again. He found he was turning the ship all the time to keep the distant dot in front of him.
Johnny?
It was the captain. Yes? Are you watching it?
Yes. It is moving between us and the border. It is in our direct line of flight now.
You can't sort of steer around it?
There are more than 300 ships in the fleet. That may be difficult.
It seems to be waiting for something. I'll risk going to have a look. He let his ship overtake the fleet and run ahead of it towards the distant dot. It made no attempt to get out of his way. It was a starship, just like his own. In fact, in a way, it was his starship. After all, there was only one starship in the entire game, the one you flew to save mankind. Everyone was flying the same one, in a way. It hung against the stars, as lifeless as a space invader. Johnny moved a bit closer, until he could see the cockpit and even the shape of a head inside. It had a helmet on. Everyone did. It was on the cover of the box. You wore a helmet in a starship. He didn't know why. Maybe the designers thought you were likely to fall off when you went round corners. He tried the communicator again. Hello? Can you hear me? There was nothing but the background hiss of the universe. I'm pretty sure you can. I've got a feeling about it. The tiny blob of the helmet turned towards him. You could no more see through the smoked glass of the helmet than you could through a pair of sunglasses from the outside, but he knew he was being stared at.
"What are you waiting for?" said Johnny. "Look, I know you can hear me. I don't want to have to—"
The other ship roared into life. It accelerated towards the oncoming fleet on two lances of blue light. Johnny swore under his breath and kicked his own engines into life. There was no hope of overtaking the attacker. It had a head start, and a starfighter's top speed was a starfighter's top speed. It was just out of gun range. He raced along behind it. Ahead, he could see some of the big capital ships of the fleet manoeuvring clumsily out of the way. They spread out slowly, trying to avoid colliding with one another. Seen from the front, it was like watching the petals of a flower opening. The attacker roared for the middle of the fleet. Then it rolled gently and fired six missiles, one after another. A moment later, two of the small Scree-wee fighters exploded, and one of the larger ships spun around as it was hit. The attacker was already heading for another fighter. Johnny had to admit it, it was beautiful flying. He'd never realized before how badly most players flew. They flew like people who lived on the ground, from right to left and up and down, woodenly. Like someone moving something on a screen, in fact. But the attacker rolled and twisted like a swallow in flight, and every turn brought another Scree-wee ship under its guns. Even if they'd been firing back, it wouldn't have been hit, except by accident. It pirouetted. The captain's face appeared on the screen.
You must stop this!
I'm trying! I'm trying! Don't you think I'm trying? The attacker turned. Johnny hadn't thought it was possible for a starship to skid, but this one did. It paused just for a moment as its jets slowed it down, and then accelerated back the way it had come, right down his sights.
Look, stop!
He shouted. He had a missile ready. Why even bother to shout? Players couldn't hear. They only saw the game on the screen.
Who are you?
It was a very clear voice, and very human. The captain sounded as though she'd learned the language out of a book, but this voice was one that someone had really used since they were about 1 year old.
You can hear me! Get out of the way, stupid!
The two pilots stared at one another across a distance that was getting smaller very, very fast.
I've heard that before, Johnny thought. That voice. You can hear all the punctuation.
They didn't crash, exactly. There was a grinding noise as each starship scraped the length of the other, ripping off fins, ripping open tanks, and then spun drunkenly away. The control panel in front of Johnny became a mass of red lights. There were cracks racing across the cockpit.
"Idiot!"
screamed the radio.
"It's all right," said Johnny urgently. "You just wake up!"
His ship exploded. Chapter 7. The Dark Tower. It was 16 degrees 34 by the thermometer. Time was different in game space. No matter how often you died, you never got used to it. It wasn't as if you got better with pre...
She'd hurt him. Inside the game.
He sat up. The Scree-Wee were inside the game because it was their world. Wobbler and the rest hadn't really been in it. He was pretty sure he'd just dreamed them in because he needed someone to pilot the food tankers.
But he'd heard her in Patel's.
That ringing, sharp voice, which made it very clear that its owner thought everyone in the whole world was dim-witted and had to be talked to like a baby or a foreigner. On the screen, empty space rolled onwards. He had to find her. Apart from anything else, no one who flew like that should be allowed anywhere near the Scree-Wee. Wobbler'd probably know who she was. He found the room moving around him when he stood up. He probably really was ill, he thought. Well, not surprising. What with trying times and stupid school and parents trying to be friends and now having to save an entire alien race instead of getting proper sleep, it wasn't surprising. He made it to the hall and took the phone off its base and brought it back upstairs. He just extended the aerial when it rang.
Hello? Blackberry 239980, who's that speaking, please?
Is that you?
This is me.
Oh, hello, Wobbler.
You ill or something?
Flu.
Look, Wobbler,
you see the papers today?
No, Mum and Dad take them to work with them. Wobbler,
they're in the papers about Gobi software. Hang on. Says, no encounters of the 21st kind. That's the headline.
Johnny hesitated.
What does it say?
He said very cautiously.
What does inundated mean?
It's like overwhelmed, said Johnny.
Says that Gobi Software and computer game shops have been inundated with complaints about only you could save mankind, because they made that offer of £5 if you shoot all the aliens. And it says people aren't finding any aliens, and Gobi Software are in trouble because of the Trades Descriptions Act. And they keep on using the word hacker, said Wobbler, in the sneering tones of one who knows what a hacker really is and knows that most journalists don't. And there's a quote from Al Ramper, president of Gobi. He says they're recalling all the games, and if you send back the original discs, they'll send you a token for their new game, Dodge City 1888. That got 4 stars in FZAP.
Recalling the games?
Yes, but you haven't got the original discs, said Johnny. You hardly ever have any original discs.
No, but I know the guy whose brother bought it, said Wobbler happily.
So it was just a problem with the game, right? You weren't mental after all.
I never said I was mental, said Johnny.
No, but...
Well, you know, said Wobbler.
He sounded embarrassed.
Wobbler?
Yes?
You know that girl who was in Patel's?
Oh, her. What about her?
Do you know who she is?
She's someone's sister, I think.
Whose?
Goes to some kind of special school for the terminally clever. She's called Kylie or Crystal or one of those made-up names.
What do you want to know for?
Oh, nothing. Just because she complained about the game in Patel's, I suppose. Whose sister is she?
Some guy called... Oh, Plonker. Yeah, friend of Big Mac's. You sure you're all right?
Yes, fine.
Cheers. Cheers. You going to be in tomorrow?
Spec so. Cheers.
Cheers. Big Mac wasn't on the phone. Where Big Mac lived, people hardly ever got letters. Even muggers were frightened to go there. People talked about the Joshua and Clement block in the same way that they probably once talked about the Black Hole of Calcutta or the Spanish Inquisition's reception area. The tower loomed all alone, black against the sky, like someone's last tooth. There wasn't much else around the place. There was a row of boarded-up shops, but you could see where the fire had been. And there was a pub made out of neon lights and red brick. It was called the Jolly Farmer. The tower had won an award in 1965, just before bits had started falling off. It was always windy. Even on the calmest day, gales whistled icily through the concrete corridors. The place was some kind of wind reservation. If the Joshua and Clement block had existed a few thousand years ago, people would have come from all over the country to sacrifice to the wind god. Johnny's father called it Rottweiler Heights. Johnny could hear them barking as he walked up the stairs. The lifts had stopped working in 1966. Everyone in the tower seemed afraid, and mostly they seemed afraid of one another. Big Mac lived on the 14th floor, with his brother and his brother's girlfriend and a pit bull terrier called Clint. Big Mac's brother was reliably believed to be in the job of moving video recorders around in an informal way. Johnny knocked cautiously, hoping to be loud enough to be heard by the people, but quiet enough to be missed by Clint. No such luck. A wall of sound erupted from behind the door. After a while, there was the clink of a chain, and the door opened a few centimetres. A suspicious eye appeared at about the height an eye should be, while a metre below, there was a certain amount of confused activity as Clint tried to get both eyes and his teeth into the same narrow crack.
Yeah? Is Big Mac in? Dunno.
Johnny knew about this. There were only four rooms in the flat. Big Mac's family was huge and lived all over the town, and practically no member of it knew where any other member was until they were quite sure who was asking.
It's me, Johnny Maxwell, at school.
Clint was trying to push a 15-centimetre-wide head through a 5-centimetre-wide hole.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny felt that he was being carefully surveyed.
He's down the pub, yeah.
Oh, right, said Johnny, in what he hoped was a normal voice.
I mean, yeah.
Big Mac was 13, but the landlord of the Jolly Farmer was reputed to serve anyone who didn't actually turn up on a tricycle. His way home led back past the pub anyway. He agonized a bit about going in. It was all right for Big Mac. Big Mac had been born looking 17. But Big Mac turned out to be outside anyway, leaning against the bonnet of a car. He had a couple of friends with him. They watched Johnny intently as he approached, and the one who had been nonchalantly fiddling with the car's door handle stood up and glared. Johnny tried to swagger a bit.
Yeah, Johnny,
said Big Mac in a vague kind of way. He's different here, Johnny thought, older and harder. The other youths relaxed a little. Big Mac knew Johnny. That made him acceptable for now.
Don't often see you up here, said Big Mac. You drinking now or what?
Johnny got the feeling that asking for a Coke would definitely be bad for his street cred. He decided to ignore the question.
I'm looking for Plonker, he said. Wobbler said you know him. What do you want him for? Said Big Mac.
On the wall in school, or down at the Mall, Big Mac wouldn't have even asked. But there were different rules here. Like in school, Big Mac tried to hide how good he was at numbers, and up here he had to hide his ability to hold a normal conversation. Johnny saw a way through.
Actually, I'm looking for his sister, he said.
One of Big Mac's friends sniggered. Big Mac took Johnny's arm and led him a little way off.
What'd you come up here for? He said. You could have asked me tomorrow.
It's important.
Big Mac, you coming or what?
Big Mac glanced over his shoulder.
Can't,
he said.
Got to sort out something else.
One of the kids said something to the other one, and they both laughed. Then they got into the car. After a little while, it started up, bumped up onto the pavement and off again, and then accelerated into the night. They heard the tyres screech as it turned the corner on the wrong side of the road. Big Mac relaxed. Suddenly, he was a lot less tough and a bit shorter, and more like the amiable, not quite thicko Johnny had always known.
"Didn't you want to go with them?" said Johnny.
"You're a right nerd, aren't you?" said Big Mac, in a friendly enough voice.
"Wobbler says you have to say dweeb now, not nerd," said Johnny.
"I usually say dickhead. Come on, let's go," said Big Mac. "'Cause there'll probably be some unhappy people around here pretty soon. It's our own fault for leaving a car here."
"What?"
"Dweeb, you don't know nothing about real life, you."
"It's just games," said Johnny, half to himself. "All different sorts. Big Mac."
Somewhere away in the distance, a car horn wailed and was suddenly cut off. Big Mac stopped walking. The breeze blew his T-shirt against him, so that Terminator was superimposed on a chest that looked like a toast rack.
"What?"
he said. "Look, have you ever wondered what's real and what isn't?"
"Bloody stupid thing to wonder," said Big Mac.
"Why?"
"Real's real. Everything else isn't."
"What about, well, dreams?"
"Nah, they're not real."
"They've got to be something. Otherwise you couldn't have them, right?" said Johnny desperately.
"Yeah, but that's not the same as really real."
"Are people on television real?"
"Course."
"Why are we treating them as a game, then?"
"You mean on the news?"
"Yes."
"That's different. You can't have people going around doing what they like."
"But we..."
"Anyway, space games aren't real," said Big Mac.
He kept looking down the dark street. Johnny relaxed a little.
"Are you real?"
"Dunno. Feel real. It's all crap anyway."
"What is?"
"Everything. So who cares? Come on. I'm going back home."
They strolled past what had been in 1965 an environmental green space, and was now a square of dog-poisoned earth where the shopping trolleys went to die.
"Plonker's a bit of a maniac," said Big Mac. "Bit of a wild man. Bit of a loony. Lives in a big posh house, though."
"Where?"
"Oh, in Tyne Avenue or Crescent or somewhere," said Big Mac.
A blue light lit his face for a moment as a police car flashed past the end of the road, its siren dying into the distance. Big Mac froze.
"What's his real name?" said Johnny.
"Eh?" "Yeah, Gary, I think."
Big Mac was staring at the end of the road. The blue light was still visible. It had stopped about half a mile away. They could see it reflected off an advertising hoarding.
"Just Gary," said Johnny.
Big Mac's face was wet in the light of the street lamps. Johnny realized that he was sweating.
"Might be done," said Big Mac.
He shifted uneasily from one foot to the other. Another siren echoed around the night. An ambulance went past on the main road, ghostly under its flashing light.
"Look, Big Mac..."
"Bugger off!"
Big Mac turned and ran, his Doc Martens crashing on the pavement. Johnny watched him go. He thought of all the things he should have said. He wasn't stupid. Everyone knew what happened to cars around the Dark Tower. What could he say now? And his body thought, "You don't say anything, you do something." It started running all by itself after his friend, taking his brain with it. Despite a bedroom full of weight training equipment that would have been of considerable interest if the police had ever bothered much about a recent theft down at the sports centre, Big Mac wasn't in much of a condition. He had been born out of condition. Johnny caught him up on the bend.
"I told you to bugger off. Nothing to do with you,"
said Big Mac as they headed towards the distant lights.
"They crashed it, didn't they?"
"Nosser's a good driver."
"Yeah? Good at going fast?"
There was a crowd standing around at the traffic lights further down the road. As they ran, another ambulance overtook them and rocked to a halt. The crowd parted. Johnny caught a glimpse of, well, not a car, but maybe what a car would look like after trying to be in the same place as a liquid cement truck. He knew it was a cement truck, because one had climbed up the pavement and lay on its side. Its load was fast becoming the biggest brick in the world. In the distance, there was the scream of a fire engine getting nearer. He grabbed Big Mac's arm, pulling him around.
"I don't think you want to go any closer," he said.
Big Mac shook himself free, just as the police managed to lever the crumpled door open. Big Mac stared. Then he turned, tottered over to a low garden wall by the roadside, and was sick. When Johnny reached him, his whole body was shaking with cold and terror.
Bugger you! I could have been in that, you...
Big Mac was sick again, all down the front of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Johnny took his coat off and put it over the other boy's shivering shoulders.
They kept going on at me. I told them, I said...
Yeah, yeah, that's right, said Johnny, looking around. Look, you just sit here. There's a phone. You just sit there, all right? You just...
Don't go away!
What? Oh, yes, right. Come on, then. Click. Hello, this... Yolis, it's Johnny. Yes? Your mum in the hospital tonight? No, she's on days this week. Why?
Can you get her to bring her car down to Witheridge Road?
What's up? You sound as if you've been...
Look, shut up. Get her to do it, right? Please. It's Big Mac.
What's up with him?
Yolis, this is important. This is really important.
You know how she goes on when I...
Yolis!
Oh, all right. Hey, is that a siren?
We're in a phone box. You better get her to bring a blanket or something. And hurry up. It's dead smelly in here.
That was a siren, wasn't it?
Yes.
He put the phone down. Big Mac wasn't being sick anymore. He hadn't got anything to be sick with. He was just leaning against the door, shaking.
She'll be along right away, said Johnny, as cheerfully as he could manage. She's a ward sister. She knows all about this stuff.
Outside, one of the ambulances drove away. Firemen were all over the wreck. Some of them were getting equipment off the engine. Big Mac stared at the scene.
They're probably fine, lied Johnny. It's amazing how people can...
Johnny.
What?
No one's fine who looked like that, said Big Mac in a flat voice. There was blood all over.
Well,
my brother'll kill me when he finds out. He said if I have the cops round again, he'll throw me out of the window. He'll kill me if he finds out.
He won't, then. You didn't do anything. We were just hanging out, and you felt ill, that's all.
He'll kill me.
What for? No one knows anything except me, and I don't know anything, I promise.
It was gone 8 when Johnny got home. He left his coat in the shed until he could sneak it in and sponge it off, and said he'd been round at Yolis's, which was true, and was a pretty good way of avoiding questions, because his parents approved of Yolis on racial grounds. To object to him being round at Yolis's would be like objecting to Yolis. Yolis was dead handy. Anyway, it wasn't as if anyone had cooked any dinner. Mrs. Yolis had made him a hot chocolate when he was there, but he hadn't accepted a meal, because that suggested you didn't have them all that often at home, and you didn't do that. She'd put Big Mac to bed, Big Mac with his skinhead haircut. He microwaved himself something called a pour-on genuine Creole lasagna, which said it served 4 portions. It did if you were dwarfs. The phone went as he was carrying it upstairs. It was Wobbler.
Yolis just rang me.
Right.
Why didn't you get them to put Big Mac in an ambulance?
Who with? There was a moment of silence from Wobbler as he worked this out. Then he said, yuck. Right.
Anyway, people had asked questions. Big Mac's been in enough trouble as it is, what with his brother and one thing and another.
Right.
Wow.
Gotta go now, Wobbler. Gotta eat my dinner before it congeals. He put the phone down on the tray and looked at it. There was something else he was going to do. What was it? Something, anyway. The lasagna looked real. It looked as though someone had already eaten it once. The captain looked up. Most of her officers were standing in front of her. Except for the gunnery officer, who was looking smug, they all wore rather embarrassed expressions.
Yes,
said the captain. To her surprise, it wasn't the gunnery officer who spoke. It was the navigation officer, a small and inoffensive screewee who suffered from prematurely shedding scales. She said.
Yes,
said the captain again.
That is, all of us,
said the navigation officer, looking as if she wished she was somewhere else.
We feel that, the present course is, an unwise one, with respect,
she added.
In what way?
Said the captain. She could see the gunnery officer grinning behind the little screewee. No one could grin like a screewee. Their mouths were built for it.
We, that is, all of us, we are still being attacked, and that last attack was a terrible one. The Chosen One stopped it at the cost of his own life, said the captain. He will return, said the navigation officer. 20 of our people will not.
The captain wasn't really looking at her. She was staring at the gunnery officer, whose grin was now wide enough to hold a set of billiard balls, and probably the cue, too. He's been talking to them, she told herself. Everyone's on edge. No one can think straight, and he's talking to them. I should have had him shot. They wouldn't have liked it, but I could probably have shouted them down.
So what is it you are suggesting?
She said.
We, that is, all of us,
said the little screewee, with an imploring glance at the gunnery officer.
We feel we should turn and...
Fight, said the captain.
Make a last stand. Yes, that's right. And that's the feeling of all of you?
The officers nodded, one after another.
Sorry, ma'am,
said the navigation officer.
The others stood and fought, said the captain. The space invaders and the others. We've all seen the wrecks. All they knew was how to attack. They stood and fought and fought and died. We are dying too,
said the navigation officer.
I know. I am sorry, said the captain. But many are living, and every minute takes us further from danger. We are so near the border. If we stop, you know what will happen. Game space will move. The border will retreat. The humans will find us. And then they will die, said the gunnery officer. And we shall win. Those others were stupid. We are not. We can win. We shall give the humans the mother of all battles.
Ah, yes, said the captain.
Mother and grandmother of battles. Battles that breed more battles. And this is your leader speaking, sneered the gunnery officer. The leader of the fleet. It is pathetic. Cowardly.
When we are home, the captain began.
Home? This is our home. We have no other. All this talk of the border and a planet of our own. Have any of us seen it? No. It's a legend. Wishful thinking. A dream. We lie to ourselves. We make up stories. The chosen one. The hero with 1,000 extra lives. It's all dreams. We live and breed and die on our ships. That is our destiny. There is no choice.
Chapter 8. Peace Talks, Peace Shouts. Johnny awoke in the starship. Normally he was some way from the fleet, but this time it was around him. There were screewee ships on every side. They were flying the wrong way. Immediately a face appeared on the screen. Except for a few differences on the crest and a slight orange tint to the scales, it might have been the captain.
Calling the human ship.
Who are you?
I am the new captain. These are my instructions.
What happened to the old captain?
She is under arrest. These are my instructions.
Arrest? What for? What did she do?
She did nothing. Listen to me. You have 60 seconds to get beyond range of our guns. For honor. After that, you will be fired upon with extreme force.
Hang on.
The count has started. But end of communication. Die, human.
The screen went blank. Johnny stared at it. It hadn't been a friendly face. The voice sounded as though it had learned human out of a book, just like the real captain, but in this case, it had been a nasty book. It also sounded as though it belonged to someone who would count to 60, like this.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 18, 35, 49, 58, 59, 60. Firing ready or not?
His ship jerked forward, ramming him back in his seat. That was one good thing about game space. You could do the kind of turns and manoeuvres that in real space would leave the human body looking like thin pink lino across the cabin wall. The fleet slid past, dwindling to a collection of dots behind him. A couple of laser beams crackled past, but some way away. It looked as though they were trying to frighten him off rather than kill him. The Scree-Wee had turned around. They were heading back deeper into game space. Why? They'd show up on people's screens soon. There were always some players who'd go looking. Any day now, some kid would switch on his machine, and there'd be wall-to-wall Scree-Wee heading straight for him. They weren't safe even now. Yes, there were always some people who'd go looking. And there was a green dot ahead of him. He recognized the way it moved, like a dog creeping around the edge of a sheep field. He headed towards it. Now he could remember. You thought better in game space, too. It was as if he was more him in game space. Crystal, or Kylie, or one of those made-up names, Wobbler had said. And Big Mac had said the other name was Dunn. He twirled the knob of the communicator panel. "Crystal?" he tried. "Kylie? Catherine? Whatever?" There was just the hiss of the stars, and then, "It's Kirsty, actually." "Don't fire," said Johnny quickly. "Who are you?" "Don't fire first. Promise? I hate dying. It makes it hard to think." The other ship had stopped being a dot now. If she was going to fire, he was as good as dead, if dead was good. "All right," she said slowly. "No firing. Peace talk. Now tell me who you are." "I'm a player, like you," said Johnny. "No, you're not. None of the other players talk to me. Anyway, you're on their side. I've been watching you." "Not exactly on their side," said Johnny. "Well, you're not on my side," said Kirsty. "No one is." "Did they try to surrender to you, too? I heard you say in Patel's shop that they'd sent you a message." There was another silence filled with the whispers of the universe, and then a cautious voice. "You're not the fat one who looks as though he could do with a bra, are you?" "No, listen," Johnny tapped his controls hurriedly. "The black one who looks like an accountant?" "No, look." "Oh, no, not the skinny one with the big boots and the pointy head." "No, I'm the one who kind of hangs around and no one notices much," said Johnny desperately. "Who? I didn't see anyone." "Right, that was me." "They surrendered to you?" "Yes." Number three missile went ping as it locked onto her ship. "Now for number four."
"But you're a nerd."
"Ping." "I think it's dweeb now. Anyway, I'm more than a dweeb."
"Ping." "Why?"
"I'm a dweeb with five missiles targeted on you."
"You said you weren't going to fire."
"I haven't yet."
"You said this was a peace talk."
"You did. Anyway, it is. It's just that I'm kind of shouting." If he concentrated, he thought he could hear music in the background when she spoke.
"You've really got missiles targeted on me?"
"Yes."
"I'm amazed you thought of it."
"So am I. Look, I don't want to shoot anyone, but I need help. The fleet's turned round. They fired at me."
"That's their job, dweeb. They fire at us, we fire at them. Why did they stop? It's no fun if they don't fire back."
"They surrendered."
"They can't surrender. It's a game."
"Well, they did. Sometimes you change the game." "I don't know, Kirsty."
"Listen, I hate that name."
"I've got to call you something," said Johnny.
"What do you call yourself?" "If you tell anyone else, I'll kill you."
"I thought you were planning to do that anyway."
"I don't mean just kill you. I mean really kill you."
"All right. What's your game name?"
"Sigourney." "You're laughing."
I'm not. It was a sneeze. Honest. No, it's a good name. Very appropriate.
It's just dreaming anyway. I'm dreaming this. You're dreaming this."
"So what? Doesn't make things unimportant." There was some more silence with the scratchy suggestion of music in the background, and then,
"Aha!
While we've been talking, Mr. Clever, I've targeted missiles on you.
Johnny shrugged, even though there was no way she could see that. Doesn't matter. I thought you would anyway. So we kill each other. Then we'll have to go through all this again.
It's stupid. Don't you want to find out what happens next?
More scratchy music.
I can hear scratchy music, said Johnny. It's my Walkman.
Clever. I wish I'd thought of that. I tried dreaming my camera, but the pictures weren't any good.
What are you listening to? See inlay for details. Please keep this copy for your records.
There was another scratchy pause. Then, as if she'd been thinking deeply, she said,
Look, we can't be in the same dream. That can't happen.
We could find out.
Where do you live?
This time the pause went on for a long time. The Screewee fleet appeared on the radar.
We'd better move, said Johnny. They've started firing.
Something's happened to the captain. She's the one that wanted peace in the first place. Look, I know you live in Tyne Avenue or Crescent or somewhere.
How come we live so close?
Dunno. Bad luck, I suppose. Look, they're going to be in range soon.
No problem. Then we shoot them.
We'll be killed. Anyway.
So what? Dying's easy.
I know. It's living that's the problem, said Johnny, meaning it. You don't sound like someone who takes the easy way. See inlay for details played on in the distance.
So what do you have in mind?
Johnny hesitated. He hadn't thought that far. The new captain didn't seem to want to talk.
Dunno. I just don't want any Screewee to get killed. Why not?
Because when they die for real.
I just don't, okay?
Several fighters had left the fleet and were heading purposefully towards them.
I'm going to try and talk one more time, he decided. Someone must be listening. Nerdy idea.
I'm not much good at the other kind. Johnny turned his ship and hit the go faster button. A few shots whiffled harmlessly past him and did a lot of damage to empty space. And then he was heading at maximum speed towards the fleet. Music came over the intercom.
Idiot! Dodge and dive! No wonder you get shot a lot!
He wiggled the joystick. Something clipped one of the starship's wings and exploded behind him.
And you've got the fighters after you! Ha! You can't even save yourself!
Johnny didn't take his eyes off the fleet, which was bouncing around the sky as he flung his ship about in an effort to avoid being shot at.
You might try to be some help, he shouted.
There was a boom behind him.
I am. You're shooting them? You're very hard to please, actually.
The captain tried the door of her cabin again. It was still locked. And there was almost certainly a guard in the corridor outside. Screewee tended to obey orders, even if they didn't like them. The gunnery officer was very unusual.
That, she thought bitterly, is what comes of promoting a male. They're unreliable thinkers.
She looked around the cabin. She didn't want to be in it. She wanted to be outside it. But she was in it. She needed a new idea. Humans seemed much better at ideas. They always seemed to be on the verge of being totally insane, but it seemed to work for them. The inside of their heads would be an interesting place to visit, but she wouldn't want to live there.
How do you think like a human? Go into madness first, probably, and then out the other side. Listen, listen! If you keep going this way, you'll all be killed! You're going back into game space. People like me will find you. You'll all be killed. That's how it goes.
And then he died. It was 6-3 and 3 lines. He was lying on his bed with his clothes on, but he still felt cold. Bits and pieces of his previous life trickled through his mind.
Sigourney.
Well, Yolis would say that explained everything. And now it looked as if he'd be spending every night watching the Screewee get killed. It was bad enough fighting off people in ones and twos, but they were just the ones who were weird or lonely or bored enough to go looking. Wobbler said thousands of copies of the game had been sold. Even if most people took them back to the shops, there'd always be someone playing.
Once the Scree-Wee turned up again, the news would get around. And then, one day, long after no one played the game anymore, there'd be these broken ships turning over and over in the blank screen darkness of game space. And he couldn't stop it. Cursed Sigourney was right. That's what they were there for. It was Tuesday, too. It was maths for most of the morning, and then English. He'd better write a poem at lunchtime. You could generally get away with a poem. He got his jacket out of the shed and sponged it off as best he could, and then propped it up by the heater. Then he investigated the fridge. His father had been doing the shopping again. You could always tell. There were generally expensive things in jars and odd foreign vegetables. This time there was yogurt vindaloo and more celery. No one in the house liked celery much. It always ended up going brown, and his father never bought bread and potatoes. He seemed to think that stuff like that just grew in kitchens, like mushrooms, although he always bought mushrooms if they were the special expensive dried kind that looked like bits of mouldy bark and were picked by wizened old Frenchmen. There was a carton of milk which thumped when he shook it. Johnny found a cup in the ghastly cavern of the dishwasher and rinsed it under the tap. At least there wasn't much that could go wrong with black coffee. He quite enjoyed the time by himself in the mornings. The day was too early to have started going really wrong. The war was still on television. It was getting on his nerves. It was worrying him. You'd really think everyone would have had enough by now. Big Mac was in school. He'd stayed the night at Yolis's. Mrs. Yolis had washed out his clothes, even the T-shirt with blackberry skins on the back. It was a lot cleaner than it had ever been. He could feel Wobbler and Yolis looking at him with interest. So were one or two other people. Later on, when they were in the middle of the rush which meant that every pupil in the school had to walk all the way across the campus to be somewhere else, Yolis said, "Big Mac said you pulled him out of the wreck. Did you?" "What? He wasn't even..." Johnny paused. It was amazing. He'd never thought so fast before. He thought of Big Mac's room, with its Weapons of the World posters and plastic model guns and weight training stuff he couldn't lift. Big Mac had been thrown out of the school role-playing games club for getting too excited. Big Mac, who spent all his time trying hard to be a big thicko. Big Mac, who could work out math problems just by looking at them. Big Mac, who played the game of being, well, big, tough Big Mac. Johnny looked around. Big Mac was watching him. It was amazing, given that Big Mac's ancestors were a sort of monkey, how much his expression looked like the one he'd first seen on the face of the captain, whose ancestors were a kind of alligator. It said, "Help me." "Can't really remember," he said. "Only my mum rang the hospital, and they said there were only two boys, and they were..." "It was dark," said Johnny. "Yes, but if you'd really..." "It's just best if everyone shuts up about it, all right?" said Johnny, nodding meaningfully at Big Mac. "She said you did everything right anyway," said Yolis. "And she said you aren't being properly looked after." "Yolis?" "She said you ought to come round our house to eat sometimes." "Thanks," said Johnny. "I'm a bit busy these days."
"Doing what?" said Yolis.
Johnny fumbled in his pocket. "What does this look like to you?" he said. Yolis took it gravely.
"It's a photograph," he said. "Just looks like a TV screen with dots on."
"Yes," sighed Johnny. "It does, doesn't it?" He took it back and shoved it deep into his pocket.
"Yolis?"
"What?"
"If someone was, you know, going a bit weird in the head."
"Mental, he means," said Wobbler behind him.
"Just a bit overstrained," said Johnny. "I mean, would they know themselves?"
"Well, everyone thinks they're a bit mad," said Yolis. "It's part of being normal."
"Oh, I don't think I'm mad," said Johnny.
"You don't? Well, aha," said Wobbler. "I mean, the whole world seems kind of weird right now. You watch the telly, don't you? How can you be the good guys if you're dropping clever bombs right down people's chimneys and blowing people up just because they're being bossed around by a loony?"
"Shouldn't let themselves be bossed around, then," said Big Mac.
Johnny looked at him. Big Mac deflated a bit.
"It's their own fault. We don't have to. That's what my brother says, anyway.
he mumbled. "Is it?" said Johnny. Big Mac shrugged.
"Oh, well, yes," said Wobbler. "How? It's hard enough to get rid of prime ministers, and at least they don't have people taken out and shot. Not any more, anyway."
"My brother's stupid," said Big Mac, so quietly under his breath that Johnny wondered if anyone else even heard it.
"There was a man on the box saying that the bomb aimers were so good because they all grew up playing computer games," said Wobbler.
"See?" said Johnny. "That's what I mean. Games look real. Real things look like games. And it all kind of runs together in my head."
"Ah," said Yolas knowingly. "That's not mental. That's shamanism. I read a book about it."
"What's shamanism?"
"Shamans used to be these kind of people who lived partly in a dream world and partly in the real world," said Yolas. "Like medicine men and druids and guys like that. They used to be very important. They used to guide people."
"Guide?" said Johnny. "Where to?"
"Not sure. Anyway, my mother says they were creations of Satan." "Yes, but your mother says that about practically everything," said Wobbler.
"This is true," said Yolas gravely. "It's her hobby."
"She said role-playing games were creations of Satan," said Wobbler.
"True."
"Dead clever of him," said Wobbler. "I mean, sitting down there in hell, working out all the combat tables and everything. I bet he used to really swear every time the dice caught fire."
"Shamanism," thought Johnny. "Yes, I could be a shaman, a guide. That's better than being mental, at any rate."
It was maths again. As far as Johnny was concerned, the future would be a better place if it didn't contain 3y plus x squared. He had problems enough without people giving him pages of them. He was trying to put off the idea of ringing someone up. And then there was social education. Normally, you could ignore social education, which tended to be about anything anyone had on their minds at the time, or, failing that, AIDS. Really, the day ended with maths. SE was just there to keep you off the streets for another 3/4 of an hour. He could try ringing up. You just needed the phone book and a bit of thought. Johnny stared at the ceiling. The teacher was going on about the war. That was all there was to talk about these days. He listened with half an ear. No one liked the bombing. One of the girls was nearly in tears about it. Supposing she was really there? Or supposing she said she'd never heard of him? Big Mac was arguing. That was unusual. And then someone said, "Do you think it's easy? Do you think the pilots really just sit there like a game? Do you think they laugh? Really laugh? Not just laugh because they're still alive, but laugh because it's fun? When they're being shot at for a living every day? When any minute they might get blown up too? Do you think they don't wonder what it's all about? Do you think they like it? But we always turn it into something that's not exactly real. We turn it into games, and it's not games. We really have to find out what's real."
They were all looking at him.
"Anyway, that's what I think," said Johnny.
Chapter 9. On Earth, no one can hear you say,
Click. "Yes? Hello? Is Kirsty there? Who's that?"
"I'm a friend. I don't think she knows my name."
"You're a friend, and she doesn't know your name? Please." "Oh, hang on."
Johnny stared at his bedroom wall. Eventually, a suspicious voice said,
"Yes? Who's that?"
"You're Sigourney. You like sea inlay 4 details. You fly really well.
You're him."
Johnny breathed a sigh of relief. Real. Going through the phone book had been harder than flying the starship, nearly harder than dying.
"I wasn't sure you really existed," he said.
"I wasn't sure you existed," she said.
"I've got to talk to you. I mean, face to face."
"How do I know you're not some sort of maniac?"
"Do I sound like some sort of maniac?"
"Yes."
"All right, but apart from that..."
There was silence for a moment. Then she said reluctantly,
"All right, you can come round here."
"What? To your house?"
"It's safer than in public, idiot."
"Not for me,"
Johnny thought.
Okay, he said.
I mean, you might be one of those funny people.
What, clowns?
And then she said, very cautiously, it's really you.
Really, I'm not sure about, but me, yes.
You got blown up.
Yes, I know. I was there, remember?
I don't die often in the game. It took me ages even to find the aliens.
Huh, thought Johnny. It doesn't get any better with practice, he said darkly. Tyne Crescent turned out to be a pretty straight road with trees in it, and the houses were big and had double garages and a timber effect on them to fool people into believing that Henry VIII had built them. Kirsty's mother opened the door for him. She was grinning like the captain, although the captain had the excuse that she was related to crocodiles. Johnny felt he had the wrong clothes on, or the wrong face. He was shown into a large room. It was mainly white. Expensive bookshelves lined one wall. Most of the floor was bare pine, but varnished and polished to show that they could have afforded carpets if they'd wanted them. There was a harp standing by a chair in one corner, and music scattered around it on the floor. Johnny picked up a sheet. It was headed Royal College, Grade 5.
Well?
She was standing behind him. The sheet slipped out of his fingers.
And don't say she said, sitting down. You say a lot. Aren't you ever sure about things?
No. Hello.
Sit down. My mother's making us some tea. And then staying out of the way. You'll probably notice that. You can actually hear her staying out of the way. She thinks I ought to have more friends.
She had red hair and the skinny look that went with it. It was as if someone had grabbed the frizzy ponytail on the back of her head and pulled it tightly. The game, said Johnny vaguely.
Yes? What?
I'm really glad you're in it too. Yola said it was all in my head because of trying times. He said it was just me projecting my problems.
I haven't got any problems, snapped Kirsty. I get on extremely well with people, actually. There's probably some simple psychic reason that you're too stupid to work out.
You sounded more concerned on the phone, said Johnny.
But now I've had time to think about it. Anyway, what's it to me what happens to some dots in a machine?
Didn't you see the Space Invaders? Said Johnny.
Yes, but they were stupid. That's what happens. Charles Darwin knew about that. I'm a winning kind of person. And what I want to know is, what were you doing in my dream?
I'm not sure it's a dream, said Johnny. I'm not sure what it is. Not exactly a dream, and not exactly real. Something in between. I don't know. Maybe something happens in your head. Maybe you're in there because, well, I don't know why, but there's got to be a reason, he ended lamely.
Why are you there, then?
I want to save the Scree-Wee.
Why?
Because I've got a responsibility. But the captain's been, I don't know, locked up or something. There's been some kind of mutiny. It's the gunnery officer. He's behind it. But if we could get her out, she could probably turn the fleet around again. I thought you might be able to think of some way of getting her out, Johnny finished lamely. We haven't got a lot of game time.
She, said Kirsty.
She started all this. She relied on me, said Johnny.
You said she, said Kirsty.
Johnny stood up. I thought you might be able to help, he said wearily. But who cares what happens to some dots that aren't even real? So I'll just...
You keep saying she, said Kirsty. You mean the captain's a woman?
A female, said Johnny. Yes.
But you called the gunnery officer a he, said Kirsty.
That's right. Kirsty stood up.
That's typical. That's absolutely typical of modern society. He probably resents a female being better than him. I get that all the time.
Said Johnny. He hadn't meant to say He meant to say, actually, all the Scree-Wee except the gunnery officer are females. But another part of his brain had thought faster and shut down his mouth before he could say it, diverting the words into oblivion and shoving good old in their place.
There was an article in a magazine, said Kirsty. This whole bunch of directors of a company ganged up on this woman and sacked her just because she'd become the boss.
It was just like me and the chess club.
It probably wouldn't be a good idea to tell her. There was a glint in her eye. No, it probably wouldn't be a good idea, to be honest. Truthfulness would have to do instead. After all, he hadn't actually lied.
It's a matter of principle, said Kirsty. You should have said so right at the start.
She stood up.
Come on.
Where are we going? Said Johnny.
To my room, said Kirsty. Don't worry, my parents are very liberal.
There were film posters all over the walls, and where there weren't film posters, there were shelves with silver cups on. There was a framed certificate for the regional winner of the Small Bore Rifle Confederation's national championships, and another one for chess, and another one for athletics. There were a lot of medals, mostly gold, and one or two silver. Kirsty won things. If there was a medal for a tidy bedroom, she would have won that, too. You could see the floor all the way to the walls. She had an electrical pencil sharpener and a computer. The screen was showing the familiar message. New game, yes or no?
Do you know I have an IQ of 165?
She said, sitting down in front of the screen. Is that good?
Yes. And I only started playing this wretched game because my brother bought it and said I wouldn't be any good at it. These things are moronic.
There was a notebook by the keyboard.
Each level, explained Kirsty, I made notes about how the ships flew, and kept score, of course.
You were taking it seriously, said Johnny. Very seriously.
Of course I take it seriously. It's a game. You've got to win them, otherwise what's the point? Now, can we get on to the Screewee flagship? Think. Can we get into a Screewee battleship?
Kirsty almost growled.
I asked you. Sit down and think.
Johnny sat down. I don't think we can, he said. I'm always in a starship. I think things have to look like they do on the screen.
Makes some sort of sense, I suppose.
Kirsty stuck a pencil in the sharpener, which whirred for a while.
And we don't know what it looks like inside.
Johnny stared at the wall. Among the items pinned over the bed was a card for winning the under-7 long jump.
She wins everything, he thought. Wow! She actually assumes she's going to win. Someone who always thinks they're going to win.
He stared up at the movie posters. There was one he'd seen many times before, the famous one. The slavering alien monster. You'd think she'd have something like a sea inlay 4 details photo over her bed, but no, there was this thing.
Don't tell me, he said. You want to get inside the ship and run along the corridors shooting Screewee. You do, don't you? Tactically, she began. You can't. The captain wouldn't want that. Not killing Screewee.
Kirsty waved her hands in the air irritably.
That's stupid, she said. How do you expect to win without killing the enemy?
I'm supposed to save them. Anyway, they're not exactly the enemy. I can't go around killing them. Kirsty looked thoughtful.
Do you know, she said, there was an African tribe once whose nearest word for enemy was a friend we haven't met yet.
Johnny smiled.
Right, he said. That's how... But they were all killed and eaten in 1802, said Kirsty. Except for those who were sold as slaves. The last one died in Mississippi in 1864, and he was very upset.
You just made that up, said Johnny.
No, I won a prize for history.
I expect you did, said Johnny, but I'm not killing anyone.
Then you can't win.
I don't want to win. I just don't want them to lose.
You really are a dweeb, aren't you? How can anyone go through life expecting to lose all the time?
Well, I've got to, haven't I? The world is full of people like you, for a start. Johnny realized he was getting angry again. He didn't often get angry. He just got quiet or miserable. Anger was unusual. But when it came, it overflowed.
They tried to talk to you, and you didn't even listen. You were the only other one that got that involved. You were so mad to win, you slipped into game space. And you'd have been so much better at saving them than me, and you didn't even listen. But I listened, and I've spent a week trying to save mankind in my sleep. It's always people like me that have to do stuff like that.
It's always the people who aren't clever and who don't win things that have to get killed all the time. And you just hung around and watched. It's just like on the television. The winners have fun. Winner types never lose, they just come second. It's all the other people who lose. And now you're only